And welcome to Showing Up with Good Culture. I'm Liz Matthews.
And I'm Jordan Mitchell. Showing Up is a podcast with purpose where we speak to the change makers who are positively contributing to culture to impact the world around them.
On this episode, we speak to broadcaster, author, and founder of Happy Place, Fern Cotton. Fern started her broadcast career aged just 15, presenting some of the biggest shows in the UK and the US alike. She left her award-winning radio show in 2015, and in 2017, Happy Place was born. The brand now includes best-selling books, a music compilation, meditation app, a line of well-being products, a festival, and the jewel in the crown, probably what's best known as the podcast, which has now reached over 50 million people. What?
I know.
Is that right? 50 million people. Wow.
Yeah. Pretty impressive. I'm actually surprised you've managed to find time to fit us in. So thank you so much for joining Liz and I today on Showing Up. We always ask the same question to start off with, which is, what does showing up mean to you?
Showing up means trying again. I think that's what it means to me, because I've kind of had to do that over the years. And I think we're often really scared to, because we're so worried about judgment, and we know that cancel culture exists and all of that sort of toxicity that stops us from trying again. So I think it means, you know, getting out of bed and giving life another go. But really, like, trying again, even when you've had huge stumbling blocks, or when you've face some sort of adversity, or you've just simply made a mistake, which we all do all the time. But there's so little room to make mistakes in the current climate that we live in. And I believe that we should all be allowed to, and then to show up again the next day. So it's a huge part of it for me, is making mistakes and then trying again.
Love that.
Amazing. And obviously, Happy Place is so important to so many people, actually. And as I look at your Instagram and your community, and people really say that it's been life-changing, not least, I guess, because you talk very generously about your own struggles with anxiety, low self-worth, and you've almost kind of turned pain into purpose. So I guess, aside from the obvious, like family and friends and cooking and the things that you kind of have spoken about before, what makes you happy?
I think it is, it sounds quite nebulous, but it is connection. And it's probably quite a new discovery in the last 4 or 5 years. And that connection can come in lots of different forms. Certainly connecting with other people, because it's what I luckily get to do most days. I'm so lucky that I get to talk to just hugely interesting people all the time, and I never take that for granted. It feels like an absolute treat to be able to ask people very intimate questions within like 2 minutes of meeting them, and for there to be a genuine connection. You know, it's not just like I'm interviewing them, we're meeting in a very sort of human place, and that feels very, very special. But also connecting with I mean, I've just written a book about it, but that other stuff, like there's something else that is out there, there's something bigger. And I don't always have a sort of specific language, because I don't align to one particular religion or doctrine, but I certainly believe there is something else bigger at play. And connecting with that daily, you know, multiple times in the day, it hasn't got to be like I'm meditating or I'm doing some sort of massive ritual or ceremony, but just in tiny, minuscule ways throughout the day, making sure that I check in with that and see the bigger picture, rather than going, oh my God, I've missed this deadline, I haven't emailed back that person, what do they think of me? But just sort of zooming out a bit. So I think all of those, and then there's these like golden nuggets of connection where, like, yesterday I started painting again, and I did this whole painting in one sitting, and it sort of flew out of me, and I felt so connected to something, like love and energy and all that good stuff. So yeah, it's something that's become very important to me, and it makes me feel really good.
So you mentioned your new book. I think it's your 12th book. Would that be right? 12th or 13th?
I don't know, which makes me sound like a right wanker, but I genuinely don't know.
Well, I mean, I've got several of your books, your cookery books. I'd say to everyone,
I forced them upon you.
No, well, you've
Christmas presents.
Kindly sent them to us. But I have to say, the mood journal, I have got 75 children, as everyone knows.
Yes, you have.
And I block bought on Amazon loads of the mood journals that I now just give to all my kids for kids' parties.
Oh, I need to get that for Jada.
But the parents, I've got so many brownie points from that because parents love the book. And the kids, because it's interactive and they've got stickers. So anyway, that is a wonderful gift that you've given me because now I don't have to think about kids' parties. But I just wanted to talk about Bigger Than Us because I got the opportunity to read it when I was away for work recently, which is amazing because I never get a chance to read. And I found it very moving. I found it very helpful. I almost feel like I want it by my bed as a guide because I sort of chopped around at different sections. And you sort of described it as writing it as being really healing and, you know, life-changing for you. And I think you probably wrote it or most of it during lockdown. So can you talk a bit about what that process was like? Because we were sort of texting one another over that period and you were kind of saying, this book is everything. It's really, really cathartic.
Yeah, it sounds almost like a little book promotion line, like it changed my life. But it bloody helped me. Like it did because, again, as a sort of extension to the other stuff that I'm doing, I got the opportunity to talk to all these amazing people, and some of them were friends, but some of them arrived in my life at the right time when I was writing this book. And it's like, what the hell? Why has this person just turned up in my life? And they are the expert in the subject that I now obviously need to dive into. The book was written without too much planning. I didn't know what subjects I was going to zone in on. But then all of a sudden someone would go, oh, you should talk to blah, blah. And then I'd email them and then we'd get into a massive chat about the Enneagram or energy work or whatever it might be. And now I've got all these other new brilliant friends. So I learned so much. And I also went through, like, the book is quite experience led. And I sort of talk my way through all of this new stuff that I'm trying and the mishaps that I have within that, but also the really amazing moments of clarity. And a lot of it has stayed with me and I've implemented it into my daily life. Like, just even if it's just going on in my head while I'm making the kids dinner or whatever, they're just thought processes and lovely subjects to mull over. So yeah, it was deeply healing. Also sort of coincided with me turning 40, which I think in a cliche way is a big thing for everyone where you go, right, what the hell was all that about? That 40 years, what happened there? And what am I going to do with all that? And how am I going to move forward with it and learn from it, but not lug it around on my back? And it was a bit of a good reset in that way. And I know who I am now. I know I'll know myself even more in like 20 years, but I know who I am. I'm a little homebody who likes to do reading and painting and pottering around. And I don't rail against that anymore. That's who I am and I'm cool with it. So yeah, the whole process was a good chunk of self-inventory that's left me feeling good.
I love that. It's kind of like leaning into your authentic self. But I think, how do you still manage navigating what's going on in the head? Because obviously we have the good and bad, you know, right now you're saying I'm empowered, I know myself, I know what's good for myself. But how do you manage that sort of that chatter in your head where it kind of jumps in and goes, well, are you though? And it's trying to overcome sort of believing that part, because it's all parts of us, but it's kind of, we want to contain the niggling sort of chatter in the back of our minds.
Yeah, I mean, I think the best way to, I guess, mitigate it is to just go, I know it's going to happen. You know, there's very few people who don't have that in the modern world. And if they do, they probably live in a monastery somewhere and dedicate their whole lives to meditating, which is beautiful, but it's not for everyone. So I just try not to beat myself up too much. Like, although, yes, I've just sat here saying I feel good, I've definitely done some good healing there. You know, this morning I was like, oh my God, the kids are late for school again. They're not putting their shoes on. The house is a bloody tip. I've got a podcast in a bit. Why am I doing this to myself? You know, I go into all the usual things and then beating myself up about stuff or could have done this better. And I think I probably just see it with a little bit more distance now. Not always, but if I'm in the right headspace, I can go, right, obviously, I'm going to say all that negative stuff because that's what I've done for the last 40 years or however long it's been, maybe since teen years that we start to learn that sort of social conditioning. And I just sort of step back from it a bit and go, yeah, okay, it's not the end of the world. I know I'm going to have all these thoughts, or just before I do a big scary podcast or whatever, I'm probably going to be thinking, oh my God, they're going to hate me. You know, they're all going to be judging me, what they're going to think. And 9 times out of 10, that doesn't happen. And even when it does, you know, I did a job quite recently, and I felt after I walked away from it that I hadn't been my best. I hadn't been in flow. I hadn't felt that I was properly me. I was trying a bit too hard. And I walked away from that. And first of all, I could have sunk a bit into shame. And I thought, well, it doesn't really matter, does it? Like, that's going to happen every now and again. I'm going to have a bum one, or it's going to feel a bit crap. And I'm not going to waste now a week going, oh, I'm so awful. I could have done it better. Or what will people think? I just try and not linger on it too much. But as long as we all know it's inevitable and that we all have it, and that there's probably no getting away from it. You know, you can do all the positive mantras in the world. You're still going to have a bit of that that comes in. It's just what makes us human. And it's just about not feeling defined by it. You know, we don't have to be defined by all that negative stuff. We can just hear it and then move on.
You know, you speak very openly about your relationship with nature and the need to be in nature, whether it's, you know, by the coast or where you live and just getting out for a run, and your relationship with exercise. And I also know that, like me, you're a chronic insomniac and really, really struggle with kids waking up and just being able to settle and be calm. So on a day when you have had no sleep, when the kids have been driving you mad, when you're worried about what you're doing the next day, is there something related to your happy places, the nature, the exercise, the cooking? Is there something you'll never skip? Is there something you'll always make time for and then, I guess, feel better after?
Yes, and it's the simplest thing in the world, but it might not completely correct everything that's gone wrong or make me feel like a total U-turn, but it will definitely help. It's never not helped, and that is going for a walk with headphones on, listening to music. I don't want to listen to, if I'm in that headspace, I can't listen to a podcast. I can't listen to someone else talking, maybe Eckhart Tolle, but I'd rather listen to music that uplifts me and makes me feel connected. So possibly the late Beatles era always works for me, like Love, and listen to it on repeat. That like remastered Rooftop album I've been playing relentlessly. But if I'm feeling edgy, which I can get to very quickly, it doesn't take much to make me feel like, oh God, I'm edgy. I don't even know what it is, but I'm just not feeling like I can relax in the moment. I don't feel safe in the moment. I get my headphones on whenever I can in the day. It might only be half an hour when I'm meant to be eating lunch, or might be half an hour when Jesse's doing bath time and I'm saying to him, can I just tag team you here so I can go out for half an hour? And just get out. I luckily live near a park, but I used to live in central London, and I would just walk around the streets of London with headphones on, just walking, not thinking about anything particularly, not trying to solve problems, but just walking. Like, there's something about it for me that just works. The fact that I've decided to quite visibly switch up the energy by getting out of sitting in the house or whatever I'm doing and going somewhere and moving and listening to the music and getting into the music and really treating that as some kind of lovely therapeutic sound, which, you know, obviously sound therapy is deeply healing. It's just walking. Like, it's not like I'm having to do some mad HIIT workout or going to some fancy Pilates place. I'm just walking. I'm very lucky that I have, you know, a body that allows me to do so. So I make use of it and I go out and I walk.
I love that. I feel like that's something that even I've got a daughter, she's at university, and, you know, being in a new place, you get anxious. As kind of just saying, it's a really tangible thing. Like you say, you don't have to have money or you don't have to be signed up to a special class. You can just take control. What do you feel when people sort of say these sorts of statements? You're on Instagram and it's like, feel the fear and do it anyway. And this whole kind of like, come on, jump out of the plane of life. And actually, you've gone, well, no, I don't really want to. I've done that. I don't really want to feel the fear and do it anyway. What do you think about that whole kind of, I guess it's that girl boss kind of era where it's like we're meant to be scaring ourselves all the time. What's your kind of thought on that?
I think, you know, I'm all for a positive quote, but I think if we take them very literally and we lose all nuance, they become obsolete. And what we have to do is notice the times when that is applicable. And there will be times where we go, right, I am scared and I have an inkling that if I do it and I push past the fear, that it's going to benefit me. But I also think that kind of like that energy you're talking about, Jordan, where it's like, forge forward, do your thing, feel scared, get out of your comfort zone. Sometimes we need to be really gentle with ourselves, because one thing that we all do is berate ourselves, and we are so hard on ourselves, all of us. We get to the end of the day and we think, oh, I shouldn't have said that, shouldn't have done that, could have done that better. We are so, so hard on ourselves, way harder than even the person that you think's giving you shit is, you know, your boss or your mom or your friend. We're way worse on ourselves than they are. We might blame them, but it's us. You know, it's our own inner critic that is the really potent one. And I think we need to be gentle with ourselves, be kinder to ourselves, and go, like, have compassion for ourselves to go, you know what, whatever I did earlier, A, does it really matter? But also, even if it feels it does matter, is that completely my fault? Nothing's completely irreversible, but also because I believe in making mistakes and moving on from them. But also there's so many other little variables around making a mistake or tripping up or saying something you shouldn't have, which leads you to that moment. It's not entirely on you. We need to give ourselves a damn break and just go, you know what? You're doing your best, or you did your best, and you need time out. You need to cancel all social plans this weekend. It doesn't matter if everyone's going to think you're a flake. You know, you need to be on your own, or you need to all be with one or two people that you really love and trust, who are going to talk to you kindly and with compassion, and be like, we're so hard on ourselves and we're taught to push through things. Whereas I think we just need much more gentleness. Like, that's not promoted enough, especially when we're talking about like well-being or whatever the hell you want to call it, wellness. We need to talk about that gentleness. And it's not like you have to go and get a massage or a fancy facial. It's just being kind to yourself in your head internally. But also, you know, when you are at home, turn off your phone. Don't go on Instagram making yourself feel like crap if it's triggering you. You know, read a lovely book, watch a film that's feel good, do things that you know are going to make you feel great. So you've got to get a balance of both. Push yourself when it feels right and you'll know when that is, but also step back and be gentle when you're like overwhelmed and being horrible to yourself.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. You mentioned music there, and obviously, you know, people listening to this will know you from music. You presented Top of the Pops. You had a Radio 1 show for years, Radio 2. You still have Sounds of the 90s. You and me both share that sort of love of music, and I feel like your godmother or gothmother, as he used to call
me. Yes.
To my son Bram, my firstborn son Bram, who's now 16, and we have seen him through, gosh, like the stages.
Great
and
phases.
I almost sort of document his life through music. And you know, he's a complex young man. He's 16, he's doing his mocks, life's miserable, he doesn't know his own body, but music is his healing. And I've sometimes grabbed his phone thinking he's gaming, listening to, like, on Instagram. He doesn't even go on Instagram. Music is his healing. And although we've been there for the McBusted and the slightly better, yes, Coldplay phase, and the low point for me was Slipknot.
Wow. Yeah. You did talk about
that. Yeah, we did that.
Radiohead, Interpol, kind of good again phase. He wanted to ask you a couple of questions as he went to school this morning. So he wants to know, and I guess this is pertinent to him at the moment because he's trying to work through some things. He's got two questions for you. One is, what do you listen to when you're anxious? And the other one is, what was the first album you ever bought and do you still listen to it?
Oh, Bram, what amazing questions, as expected. So let's talk about the anxiety one first. I turn to the greatest composer and musician ever in times like that, and that is Ludovico Einaudi, who I'm completely obsessed with. I've been lucky enough to see him live. This is super weird, and it's one of my favourite sort of wanky stories to tell. I ended up having lunch with him, which was so weird, right? I have never actually told this story in its entirety, so I'm giving this one to you, right? So I was offered the chance to have him on the podcast, and I was like, oh my God, of course, yes. Right, you need to fly to, where did I go? Was it Sicily? I think it was Sicily. So I was like, okay, never been to Sicily, cool. So I fly out literally for a day. So I fly out, I go to this amazing, one of the oldest opera houses in Europe to go meet him because he's writing a beautiful opera there. And I get to watch the rehearsals. I'm the only one in there thinking, I definitely shouldn't be here, but I'm watching this rehearsal. And then he's like, and then I met him and his manager and I said, oh, so where do you want to go for the podcast? He's like, no, 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 we're going for lunch first, like being brilliant Italian sort of mindset. I was like, okay. So we go to this restaurant around the corner. This is the bit of the story I've never told. And people judge me all you like. I went with this moment. This is what life's all about. We go to this restaurant and we sit down. And I'm going, I can't believe I'm having lunch with Ludovico and Audi. This is like, my mum is going to freak out. She's a mega fan. This is so cool. It's a fish restaurant. Okay. I've been a vegetarian since I was a kid. I'm not going to go to Ludo. I'm not going to be like, hey, dude, I don't eat fish. I ate all the fucking fish out there. I ate fish balls. I ate fish cakes. I ate salmon. I had a side of cod.
Oh, wow.
I ate fish. It was great. It tasted amazing. I'd missed it, quite frankly. It was delicious. I even had a little glass of wine. I had lunch with Ludovico. I'm not going to tell Ludovico and Audi I don't want to eat it. There was nothing else on the menu. In an Italian fish restaurant, you're not getting like a salad. It's fish with a side of fish. So I ate loads of fish.
Wow.
And then we went and did the podcast, which was as utterly amazing as I had hoped. And then I had a little Aperol spritz and flew home. It was like the greatest day ever. And to have spent, and I've interviewed him since, and to spend time talking to someone like that who channels this music prolifically. I mean, I was interviewing him for a body of work where he'd written, how many was it? I think it was like 8 or 9 sort of albums in a year, because it was, they were called Day 1, Day 2, Day 3. And it's all these different songs that he felt differently on different days about. It's amazing. And to me, he, like, listening to his music, it just grounds me and gets me in a place where I'm like, okay, I can manage, I'm okay, this music exists, it's channeled from something quite beautiful, it's going to be okay. So I would say to anyone, Ludovico and Audi, especially one of my favourite songs, Campfire Volume 4, amazing. He's the greatest.
Wow. Can we find
so great that I ate fish.
So great that you ate fish. I can't believe that. Also, as a non-drink, you don't drink. You can barely handle one gin. So to have a glass of wine and apple spritz, you must have had the time of your life.
Oh, I was hammered on the plane home. I was absolutely hammered and so happy. It was like, that's what life's for, isn't it? Like crazy adventures. Just let them in. Let them in.
There's one more question, because the brand will kill me.
Oh, do it.
Yes. Oh, the first album.
Oh, the first album.
And do you still listen to it? Because he's absolutely sure. I actually can't remember which first album he bought, because it wasn't like a McFly one. Fern got him a record player a couple of years ago, didn't you, for one of his birthdays? And he's got this now vinyl collection. But he's absolutely obsessive about it. And he feels that every vinyl that he's bought, he will have forever and listen to it. And I was sort of, we were debating. I can't remember what mine was. I think it was like Soul to Soul or something.
That's quite a cool one.
That's cool.
It might have been Jason Donovan. I might be trying to call it up. It was one of the
But what mine was Jason Donovan.
Shut up.
Now, I think the album was called Between the Lines.
Yes.
I might be wrong, but I think that album was called Between the Lines. And me and Lucy Bartholomew listened to that album on repeat, on cassette. We made up dance routines to the songs. I mean, and Jason is someone that I see quite a lot because I don't live too far from him. So I bump into him all the time. And it's like, if you could have told me age 10 that I'd be like having a coffee in a local cafe with Jason Donovan, I would have literally fainted. So, Bram, I'm sorry to say I don't listen to that album too much these days, but I do remember it very fondly.
Brings back happy memories.
Happy memories.
I feel like you need to do a duet with him, the Especially For You, Kylie Jason. Do you remember that?
Oh, my God.
I mean, that
what
takes
would I do if that
place.
Happened?
I mean, that might be too much.
Feel the fear and do it anyway.
Yeah. That's pushing it.
That's pushing it. I really wanted to know, because obviously you are like this amazing sponge where people can just unpack and share their journeys and their experiences. And like, I get this sense that you're like a massive empath and, you know, that go-to pal, that listening ear. Who do you go to? Who listens to you? Because you're carrying everyone else's bits and bobs and baggage. Where are you going when you're not walking around and feeling the nature around you?
Well, it is very important, I think, if you are professionally or not somebody that takes on a lot of stories, because you do carry a lot of it around with you. And sometimes it's like the best bits and you learn lots and you connect with other people. But then obviously it can be quite heavy as well. So I flip between different sorts of therapies and people that I talk to on a professional level, whether it's sometimes just talk therapy. Sometimes I'll go and see a shaman that I know. Sometimes I'll do breathing sessions or energy work. And I just see it as fun, really. For me, that's like a hobby. I don't spend money down the pub on a Friday. I put it into that. But also, I am lucky that I've got some really cool sort of newer mates, but one of them who has sort of said officially, it's not even like a unspoken thing, she's kind of said to me, look, I'm up for being your friend, but also like a mentor to you.
Lovely.
She's a bit older than me and she's got a lot of wisdom to impart and a lot of amazing storytelling to help me through trickier times personally and professionally. And we've got like a little dialogue going where I'll check in and say something to her and say, you know, have I crossed the boundary? Are you up for giving me wisdom today? If not, cool. And she's equally as direct back. Luckily, she always goes, course, I'm here, I'm up for it. But if she wasn't, I know she'd say, I'm at full capacity today, I'm with my grandkids or whatever it might be. And I would absolutely respect that without taking offence. So we've got a really clear dialogue where I can go to her and say something. And equally, sometimes she might come to me and say, I'm feeling uneasy about something and we'll chat it out. But we've got a very clear moment where we say, have I crossed the boundary? Or sometimes we'll do like hashtag boundaries and then a little tick back and it's fine.
Oh my God,
and it's really cool that I've got a mate like that who I can go to, who's had some, you know, and they've also got a lot of practice in helping other people heal professionally. So I know I'm kind of being looked after on a friendship level, but also a little extra.
Yeah.
So I'm very lucky. I suggest everyone looks for some sort of mentor if you can find them. They're out there. You just got to be open to get one.
And so I know that you've spoken about getting to an age where you've understood your mum's own struggle with depression and it running in your family, in other family members. You also are a stepmom to two older kids, as well as having two kids yourself with Jesse. How much do you talk openly about mental health in your household? Perhaps Rex and Honey might be too young, or maybe they're not, but how do you speak to the older two, you know, about their struggles? Do you encourage them to talk to you about what's going on in their worlds?
Weirdly, I think I actually talk to the younger two more about it, you know, not in a complicated way or anything particularly fancy, but like everyday stuff. And about, and I don't always nail it. Like, I am no perfect parent. I am stumbling through all of this like everybody else and full of regret about things and things I wish I'd done better and all that stuff. But I guess the things that I've tried to really cement are, if I do mess up or say something that I regret, I will always go back and say sorry and talk it out with them after and say, look, I was tired today or whatever. And I've really noticed that now they will do the same to me. And especially Honey, she'll come to me and go, oh, I'm so sorry that I was grumpy. And I'm like, look, it's cool. We can totally move on from it. But that, I think, is a big part of decent mental health, is not carrying stuff around with you after you know you've said something that you wish you hadn't and rectifying it in the moment. So we talk about that a lot, and we talk about liking ourselves a lot, which I think is a big one that a lot of people just, we don't educate kids on that at all. So at night when we're saying like, love you, honey, will always go, and I love me too. And I'm like, good, that. Rex, how are you feeling? Are you loving yourself today? And he'll be a bit more like, you know, whatever, he's nine and he's like, oh, going through the early teen bit. But at least like the language is there and we'll talk about it. And I'm always quite honest with them. Like, look, guys, I'm exhausted. I've just done the maddest day of work. I'm just not feeling like I've got much energy today. And I'll just talk about very simple stuff. I'm not sitting them down and saying, here's my back catalogue of mental health issues or whatever. I've sort of have tentatively started talking to my mum a lot more about this stuff since my first book, Happy, because I asked her to write a bit for it because I knew it would be easier than going, hey, let's talk about depression. I just said, will you write something? Because she loves writing. And she wrote this amazing stuff that she'd never said to me out loud. And I was like, wow, okay. And I knew that her mum, my nan, had had, you know, lots of breakdowns, nervous breakdowns and depression and all sorts of stuff going on in her life that had subsequently affected my mum. And my cousin Bieber, who we talk a lot about mental health and have sort of similar things going on. But with my stepkids, it's really interesting. I think if they ever came to me and said, I'm not feeling great, I would obviously 100% be there for them in that capacity and hopefully be able to bring a lot of useful stuff to the table from everything I've learned personally and professionally. But I sometimes feel like I don't want to jump into their world without them wanting me to. I'm always very vigilant. So if I felt they weren't okay, I would absolutely say, do you want to talk? Is something going on? But just on an everyday thing, I wouldn't be like, hey, like, and I've never said, you need to read my books, or I don't even know how much they know about my own backstory, because I don't want to inflict that on them unnecessarily at this point. But if they come to me, great. But I'm, you know, it's a very, very complex thing, as you know, having a blended family. And there has to be, I guess, some observation around like keeping an equilibrium. And I, again, definitely don't always nail it. And I sometimes am too in there, or sometimes I'm too distant, and I'm constantly working out how it should all fit and flow. The main thing I do is hopefully just ensure that they're happy and they feel massively, over the years, certainly more so when they were younger, that they're included in, we're having a new baby, we're getting married. And they were a massive part of all of that. First people we told, they were involved in the whole story of it. But now, you know, Arthur's at uni, he's 20. He's not going to want to talk to me about mental health. He, you know, I think he'd rather do a whole other list of stuff than do that. But as I said, I would always, always be there. And I'm always vigilant with all the kids as to, you know, where their energy's at, where their mood's at, and we'll sort of step in if needed. But yeah, I think, you know, maybe down the line they'll come to me, or because they know that this is my interest, and they'll... And, you know, because they can come to me to talk about anything. So hopefully that would be the case if there was a need. But it's not something I've been like, we must sit down and talk about mental health today when there isn't necessarily anything going on. But yeah, I think it's my own trepidation because I'm still working out 11 years down the line how to be a step parent. I think it's really complicated.
Well, I think also there's that thing where you don't want to project and create sort of space and worry where it doesn't exist. And it's just kind of keeping space and letting them know that there's that open dialogue and that forum, so that if they want to, and often people signal, they might not be like, knock, knock, hiya, I want to have a chat about mental health. But they start to sort of signal that they might, you know, be more open to speak in that way. My daughter certainly did very recently when she got back from uni and kind of just was like, bit Love Island style, can I pull you for a chat? Or actually she was just acting really awkward and weird to the point where I was like, babe, you're basically like horizontal on the floor and we're meant to be walking out the house, are you okay, hun? And then and then she pulled me for a chat. But I think you talk about, and you've got this book on speaking your truth and kind of finding courage with your and owning your truth. How do you do that? How do you build up to that? Because I think there's a huge amount of vulnerability that comes with speaking your truth, owning who you are, and almost being unapologetic about that.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm unapologetic yet. I still am very nervous about saying certain things, and I still get very nervous in moments of confrontation, and I don't always nail it. But I think I have got... pretty comfortable now talking from a very, very authentic and honest place publicly, which I definitely didn't have an ounce of that, you know, 10 years ago, because I had a job that was to entertain people and to, you know, there was a role there that didn't need me to be that raw, I guess. And I guess in my actual life, where I probably find it a bit harder, if I'm honest, weirdly, because it's with people that I know, you probably are going to upset people or friendships might change, you know, all of that stuff. But I guess I'm learning now that the more honest I am, the better. So, like, you know, you've got a good idea of what I'm like now. I know you do anyway, Liz, that I'm not great at parties and going out, and I don't really love them. And obviously, I'll always show up to parties where it's, you know, I've got a 40th this Saturday, one of my best friends in the world. But they know I will have left by 10. Mm. And we've talked about it. Like, guys, you know, I just don't deal well with it. I will come for a good few hours. The party starts at 7:30. I will be there. I will give you my everything. But at that point, I am fading away and I can feel my personality sort of going so inwards. And that's not good for me or anyone else. So I'm going to depart when I need to. But we've sort of talked about it and no one judges me for it anymore. And it's cool. So I think you have to be quite honest. And again, like probably like boundary setting, just setting boundaries as to what people's expectations are of you. But yeah, I think it's probably easy for me to sit here and say it. There are, of course, people out there who are in very, very tricky dynamics where their family don't align with the same beliefs as them around. It could be on a societal level, culturally, on looking at sexuality, whatever it might be, religion, you know. That is so complicated and the fallout can be so huge and the fallout can mean relationships totally severed. And that's where I do think people need proper guidance, mentorship, therapeutic help, because that's traumatic to move through that. It's not impossible. I know people that have gone through similar things, but you do need a good support system in place because it's not easy.
We round off this podcast by trying to unpack a little bit about showing up and how all of us can show up at home listening to this podcast in a tiny, tiny little way. And everybody that we've spoken to has had a really different answer, actually, for what they interpret showing up to mean and what they would advise other people to do. What would you say to anyone listening to this if they want to just very quickly contribute to culture positively? Mm. What would some of your kind of recommendations be?
I think it goes back to the answer to the first question that you asked me, Jordan, about what is showing up. And I think what we can all practice daily is forgiving ourselves of our past mistakes, like properly forgiving ourselves and going, you know what? I forgive you. I forgive you to yourself. I forgive you for doing this, this and this, because we don't need to be carrying that around. And subsequently, then you're so much more forgiving of everyone else, whether they were late to meet you, they cocked up at work, or they weren't putting enough effort in, or they said something that made you feel uncomfortable. That if we can forgive ourselves, we're going to be much more likely to forgive other people, which for me is showing up in the world, is trying again, picking yourself back up off the floor. But I do think it has to start with yourself. You've got to try. It's not easy. I'm not saying this flippantly. There's some stuff that I still haven't made peace with and find very, very hard to forgive myself for. Certain things I've done, said, mindsets I've had, naivety, ignorance, you know, all feelings that we've all had. I still find it very hard, but I'm absolutely willing to give it a go. And I think you have to kind of go back to it as often as you feel is needed to go, right, can I forgive myself a little bit more today and give myself a little bit more self-compassion? Because you'll just see that you'll feel the same to everyone else around you the more you do it for yourself. So we can all do that. It doesn't take anything. You don't have to buy that or go out and try it. You just have to sort of mull over it a bit and sort of sit with it a little bit and see if it gets easier 2 weeks after you've done it the first time and then a month after that, and just keep trying. You might not ever completely forgive yourself, but you'll definitely get a step closer each time.
Yeah. Well, it's that introspection, isn't it? And just being aware of behaviours. I think that's almost the first point, or the first step in terms of forgiveness, being aware of that discomfort and acknowledging it and going, okay, well, I'm feeling something, but I'm going to let go of that. And I guess forgiveness is freedom, ultimately.
Yeah. Sure is.
Well, that is an amazing point in which to end this super conversation. Thank you so much, and we'll see you soon.
See you soon.
Bye, Ben.
Bye.
That was a really sort of strange and brilliant and wonderful experience for me, because Fern is my son's godmother, a really close friend of mine, someone I've known for, well, actually she sent me a picture the other day, which actually belongs on that Instagram handle, Indie Sleeves.
Yeah.
Because it's us at a Green Day gig about 18 years ago. And my God, we look very different to what we look like now. But I think it was wonderful to speak to her, to find out things that I didn't already know. And I applaud her for being so open. I think Happy Place, I wonder if she knows the huge effect that she's had on people's life. I mean, she did that thing recently at the Cadogan Hall. Mm. And she wrote very openly that she had a few tears sort of watching people queuing up. I just sort of love how open she is. I love how she owns everything she says, including eating fish.
Yes.
And I just thought it was the most wonderful, uplifting conversation. Yeah. And how sort of weirdly non-weird it was to talk to a mate in that way, which I was kind of wondering how that would be.
Yeah, so I thought she was incredibly generous. And that whole kind of piece around, we're all a work in progress, you know, from kind of being
work.
A stepmom and still figuring out her space. And I think we can all be a lot kinder to ourselves, because I think we kind of in our mind think that there's this sort of final destination. And if we're not there yet, if we haven't reached it yet, we're not perfect. And actually, it's not about being perfect. It's just about learning and listening and growing. And I love the freedom in that.
Me too. And I loved what she said about everybody needs to find a mentor.
Oh my God.
Because I think that doesn't always need to be someone older, that this idea that they've got more experience given age, you know, we are that for each other, I would say, and have been for over a decade. And it's hugely valuable. And you should be able to check in with that person on the most minutest of things and the huge stuff as well. So I guess it's sort of at school, you would call it a buddy, wouldn't you? You buddy up with someone and you kind of have that sounding board. But I guess that would be something if anyone listening out there feels like they haven't got that. I think try and identify somebody you can talk to. It might be someone at school. It might be someone else's mum. I, you know, used to speak to quite a lot of my parents, my friends' parents, almost as a sort of sensor check before I spoke to my own parents to be like, is this shocking? I can't tell. I'm going to get a tattoo. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I think that idea that you have got someone to talk to, and also the freedom to be able to ring that person and them going, I'm not feeling it today.
Totally.
And that's okay as well.
It's that honesty, isn't it? And actually being able to say, it's okay to have boundaries. It's okay to say, actually, like you say, I don't have capacity for this today, but let's check in again tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I really respect that.
I think final thing I wanted to say is, for somebody so public, you know, this person has been in the public eye since the age of 15 and been critiqued, and definitely critiqued herself. I think that, you know, much the same as people like Elizabeth Day, she's giving us all permission to fuck up and to try again. And that's what she's sort of interpreted showing up to be.
I love that, by the way.
I love that interpretation. Showing
like
up just like try again and try again. And there is no end goal and there is no perfection, but just a little bit better than yesterday, a little bit better than last week. And just this idea that somebody so famous doesn't sort of make us feel like we've got to be so polished all the time. She feels like she's got a really, you know, sensible relationship with social media.
Mm.
And, you know, I'm reading a book at the moment by Anya Heimarch. And she talks about the simple thing. It's called If in Doubt, Wash Your Hair, which is a brilliant title. She talks about this idea of 0 to 50, you're kind of learning.
Mm.
And when you get to 50, it's your time to teach whatever you've learned. And that could be a little thing or a big thing. And in her respect, it's incredibly useful parenting advice and sort of navigating being a businesswoman and an owner.
We should get her on the pod.
We should get her on the pod. But I actually think Fern to me has always been an old soul. And while she might be a decade younger, I think she takes that role of teacher very seriously, but not in that way that, oh, I know everything, I'm going to talk to you. Actually, the reverse.
I'm going to take you on a journey.
Shit, guys, I know a lot and I wouldn't be me unless I was sharing this with you. But I'm sharing it, you know, as I go along, sort of, you know, it's not polished and it's not perfect, but actually for what it's worth, you might find it useful. But I hope she realises, and I'm sure she does and reads the comments, how impactful the Happy Place brand, which it now is a huge brand, has been on everybody's lives. So we would encourage you to listen to her podcast. We would encourage you, thing I found actually, which is brilliant, because I never, you know, when you're in your kitchen and you're like, Alexa, play music I might like, put on Happy Place's album on Spotify or Apple Music or wherever you find your albums. It's such a brilliant mix of music you know, music you don't know, classical, modern, pop. It's so brilliant.
Love
good
it.
For a car journey. I didn't get paid to say that. I just didn't think. thank you, Fern, and thank you everyone listening, and come back and listen to some more soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you.